The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. I realize the title of my episode today is What is an Indigo Woman? So if you're a man and you're listening to this, you're probably thinking, is there anything in this for me? And I can tell you straightforward, hell yes, there is. My guest today is Shayna Hammond. She's a seasoned leadership and life coach and author of the new book, Becoming an Indigo Woman. Now, she primarily works with Black women, but trust me when I tell you, the messages and the life she speaks into her clients are for everybody, especially those in leadership roles. She speaks to deeply falling and remaining in love with yourself, getting clarity in your purpose and your influence, and of course, healing. So don't let the name deter you if you're a man. Trust me on this. You want to stay tapped in because Shayna Hammond drops gems throughout this entire episode. So let's not waste any more time and get it started. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Live. Yeah. What's up? This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else. Yeah. It's the Dolo White Podcast.
All right, episode 80 now of the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, very happy to have you on, Shayna Hammond. You're the author of Becoming an Indigo Woman, right?
Yes, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
And you're also a leadership coach, and we're gonna get into everything today. So let's start with, what is an indigo woman? Let's start there.
Yes, in short, an indigo woman is a free Black woman. It's a woman who understands her internal power, who knows exactly who she is, why she's called here in this very divine moment in our lives.
I hear that a lot, that people are calling this moment, this time, 2022, this era of people, a divine moment. What does that mean to you? Why do you think that is?
Oh my goodness. I think that we're in a time where the divine feminine is rising. We're in a time where in the pandemic is requiring everything to be uncovered, everything to be revealed that maybe hasn't been as revealed to some people before, whether that be age-old racism, whether that be women's rights, et cetera. It's time to really tell the truth and to really focus on what really matters to us.
And I hear that my wife is very spiritual, and I hear about the divine feminine a lot. So I might have a little more knowledge than the average person. But for the average person, let's define that. What exactly is the divine feminine when we talk about it?
So when I say the divine feminine, I mean, you know, we've been in a place for hundreds of years where we've been leading through force, and we've been leading through control, and we've been leading in a way where we've been really leaning on scarcity and thinking that there aren't enough resources around, that we have to compete and get everything that we want. When really the truth is, we live in an abundant life. There's enough for everyone to go around. Leadership is more about the way you treat people, more about seeing people for who they really are, seeing the humanity in people, going slow to nurture relationships so that you can go fast later. It's birthing instead of building. Now, both energies are divine. Both energies are needed. It's just that we've been imbalanced for too long.
Okay. Can we talk about your background a little bit? Because I mean, if you're born here in the United States, there's I think 77% chance you're born into a Christian family. I was born into a Catholic family. I'm no longer Catholic. I don't think there's a definition to my religion or spirituality, which I prefer, but it feels like a lot more people are leaving squared in, boxed in traditional religions for things like spirituality. And it sounds like that's kind of where you are as well. So I kind of wanted to talk about, I always find it interesting as to what was the thing that was like, that made you think, hey, this isn't for me. Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, what was, when did the light bulb go off for you?
Yes, we are definitely kindred spirits. So I grew up Christian. I was Baptist in the Baptist church, and still very much, you know, have a reverence and love for my Christian roots. And I, too, would more so define myself as spiritual today. And for me, it wasn't necessarily one moment. It was kind of a series of moments, if you will. So I'm a survivor, a sexual abuse survivor. And for any of us who are survivors of, you know, extreme violence, we know that it's really a path of healing that we're on pretty much for a lifetime. And I would say the fever pitch for me, the kind of awakening, if you will, was when I went to college. And I really, you know, was able to bridge that gap between childhood and adulthood. And I was out of the house for the first time. And it was really the first time I was able to think about who I am and what I want, and was just really starting to wake up to all the ways in which I had also betrayed myself. And it was spirituality, like in most times when we're at our lowest of lows, we start asking those big questions around who am I and why am I here and is my life even worth living? And so I was in that place in college and first turned to, of course, Christianity and turned to scripture and turned to Bible. And to turn to the Bible, I went to discipleship for several years. But in discipleship and going to Bible study, I just kept feeling this nagging feeling that just something was missing. I wasn't growing at the pace that I really wanted to grow. People around me weren't necessarily growing in the ways that they were seeking to grow as well. And so I just got curious. I started reading books about Buddhism and I started reading books about Judaism and all different religions. And then I stumbled upon spiritual law. And I stumbled upon leadership books and I started seeing these different kind of parallels, if you will. There were just some truths that every single text talked about that were just, you know, spiritual law, that were just born out of love, that were a little bit more simple. And so I just began to kind of separate religion from spirituality. And the more that I do that and I focus on spiritual law and I focus on spiritual practice and really focus on who I am as a person, as opposed to what rules I'm following, that's when I started seeing true growth in myself.
Wow. I love it. I love it. You mentioned, you know, being on a path of healing, you know, that does that end for you or is that something that goes on forever? Is a person, I ask this a lot of times, I'll have, you know, spirituality people or people in leadership. And I always want to ask, like, are you ever healed?
This is such an age old debate, right? I think our brains would like to say yes, right? Like right. We want completion. My philosophy through working with so many different people from so many different walks of life and just from personal experience, I believe that we're all on a healing path. I think that as long as we're breathing, we're evolving, we're healing, and we're thriving, we have an opportunity to thrive. We have an opportunity to live bliss, or we have an opportunity to suffer. And it really is up to a lot of our decisions. It's up to the conditions that we find ourselves within. But I think that healing is a never ending journey. Mm-hmm. I myself have been to places where I'm like, I thought I healed that. Like, why am I here again? And then I realize, oh, you know, healing is a lot like teaching and learning. There are different levels to it. You know, I may have healed a certain part, but then, okay, now I'm at a different place. And so now I need to heal at a deeper level. I think as long as we're breathing, there are different levels of healing to be had.
I love that because I always feel like one thing that I've worked on in therapy and in these other things is using my voice in a time where I feel really uncomfortable. Most of the time, I just want to shrink down and not be in that moment. And you still feel that. Right. I still feel that urge to just want to disappear, you know what I mean? And not be present in that moment. But I think the healed part of you says you've got to say something. You've got to speak up. You've got to use your voice. Mm-hmm. But the feeling is still there. I think some people might think if I heal, I'm going to speak my truth all the time. And I don't think that's it. I think it's just knowing that you do have to speak up in that situation. Exactly. So with that, I ask you, since you work with so many people, what is the thing you think the most common thing that issues you see with people? Is it using their voice? Is it, what would that thing be?
When you peel back all the layers, because I've heard a lot of dilemmas over the years, a lot of professional and personal dilemmas and situations and circumstances. But when you peel back all the layers, the common thread almost every time is either people don't feel like they're enough or they feel like they're too much. It's either not enough or too much. It's never just right, right? I think that for a lot of us, part of our healing is really growing into accepting who we are. And there's a fine line between accepting and settling, especially in like romantic relationships, right? Am I settling for this person? Am I accepting this person? It's really tough. But it's even tougher when it comes to ourselves. And especially if we're leaders and we have a lot of responsibility and things are high stakes, and we have maybe a really audacious goal that has a social impact attached to it that maybe in some way is attached to our identity, we can really have a lot of insecurities come to the fore around, oof, am I good enough for this position? Am I truly the right person for this? Can I handle this? Is this a microaggression that I'm dealing with, or is this really something I need to focus on, or is it both? You know, there are all these things happening at the same time. And when you peel back the layers of what's for us to own, it really comes back to self-trust and self-love.
Totally agree with that. I remember, and I'm still fighting this to this day, becoming a parent was a big moment for me where I was like, I'm not qualified for this. Like, whose idea was this? I'm clearly not qualified for this, but you know, here we are 4 years into it, and you know, everything's okay right now. So, you know, no complaints. I do want to get to the book though, because I know the book focuses mainly on Black women is who you're speaking with.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that. I know Black women have a certain set of extra mountains to climb, especially out in the corporate world that, you know, white men like myself don't have to worry about. Men in general, a lot of times, don't have to worry about, but especially Black women have an extra set of obstacles sometimes. So let's talk about the book. What are some things you want us to know about the book?
Yeah. So the book is centered around my coaching methodology, which is called the R3 method. And the three R's stand for rebirth, reset, and renew. And so it's really an approach that through my practice, through coaching so many different Black women executives over the years in different sectors, I kept hearing very similar stories, very similar challenges, as well as very similar successes. And I also kept hearing the feeling of isolation and feeling alone and thought, okay, we need to create a sacred space for us so that we know we are definitely not at all alone in our experiences, because the conditions of white supremacy culture are very consistent. They're consistent across institutions, across sectors, across states. It's pretty consistent. And so because the conditions of white supremacy are so consistent, they tend to impact marginalized groups and also very consistent ways. And so it's important for us when we are doing our own development work to both own the things that we need to do around our mindset and practices, but also recognize that there are certain conditions that are beyond our control as well. Because what I also see with some leaders is they take on actually too much sometimes responsibility, and really it really impacts their confidence and their sense of self-worth, when really the conditions around them are not in a such a way that they can really succeed. And so it's really a both and making sure that you're doing everything you can to improve your work conditions, as well as doing the work of self-discovery. So the rebirth process is all about getting really clear on who you are and why you're here. There's something I call in the book called the JCC, your jam, your craft, and your calling. So some of us don't think about, you know, when we think about our purpose, we kind of stop there. And your purpose is the last C, I think, which is your calling. You know, for those of us who believe in a higher power, maybe you believe there's some sort of reason you're here beyond you. You know, there's a force that's driving you. But I also believe that we have what's called a jam. We have a zone of genius, something that we love to do that we could do for free. And then we have our other C, which is craft. And usually that's the thing we went to school for. It's the skill we've been honing for a long time. Sometimes all three of those things are the same thing, but most times they're not. And most times we spend most of our time doing our craft, which, you know, might make us a living, but then we wake up thinking something's missing. We wake up and self-sabotage because we're not spending time in our jam. And we're not spending time getting still and getting clear on what our jam is and how to incorporate more of our jam into our craft and into our calling. So that's what rebirth is all about.
I love that. And I say that because one of the things that I thought about when, which I think is crazy that we make 18-year-olds try to decide what they want to do for the rest of their life at the age of 18. Like, now that I think back, I'm like, I was a kid. Why did I do? But I tried to figure out, you know, what I was good at and what I loved doing. And I loved music and I was good at talking to people. I got out of high school because my teachers liked me and for no reason of my own, you know, intelligence or hard work. It was just because I was well-liked. So I knew I could talk. Yeah. And I knew I liked music, and then radio and DJing, things like that came, you know, into fruition in college. But I say that because I was able to make my jam, my craft. And I just loved what you just said. So I know there's three R's and we only covered one. So let's move on to the second one.
Yeah. So reset's so important. So reset is really getting clear on your why. Anyone who leads in any capacity, you know, your why is what you come to when things get really rough. But reset also is about releasing any old beliefs, limiting beliefs that maybe served us to a certain point, but then don't serve us anymore. And reset also is about those conditions. You know, what are those things at work that might be in the way of your genius, that maybe you need to advocate for, or maybe you need to adjust. Maybe you need to adjust your voice. There's something we call the PVT in the book, your power, your voice, and your time. How do you need to think differently about how you spend your time, how you amplify or position your voice, and how you use your power, or maybe even take your power back in a certain situation? And then the last R is renew. So once you've gotten clear on what you want, who you are, and why you do it, you want to be able to sustain it, right? And be able to do it forever. You want to be a DJ forever, right? You want to be on the radio forever. And so renew is all about, okay, what are those practices, those habits that I need to have in place such that I do this with joy? As there's something I like to make up words. I'm a former teacher. And so when in the program that I have for women, we call it joyfinance. So something I always say is you can fake confidence, but you can't fake joy. And it's those people, especially those leaders who have this, just that they emanate joy. They emanate just, you know, completion and happiness and contentment. Those are people we want to work for and work with. And so that part of the book, the section of the book is how to conjure joy and how to renew yourself over and over again.
I love that. Which one of those three R's do you find people have the hardest time doing?
I think actually the first one.
Really? I thought it would have been reset.
I know.
It's like letting go of like old stuff is hard.
Reset is tough.
Yeah.
But I will say once people get rebirth, it makes the other two easier. It's those folks who struggle with rebirth, really take a tough time. So we have what's called the Indigo Women Group Coaching Experience. It's a 9-week live experience with me and other Black women in leadership. And we go through the three R's and we start with rebirth, but we purposely spiral rebirth throughout the entire time because people have, you're one of those lucky people, right? You were really young. You knew exactly what lit you up.
Yeah.
Most people I have found are not like that.
Agreed.
Most people for various reasons have, you know, either had to go into a field to break out of poverty, either, you know, are living through their parents, you know, expectations or someone else's expectations.
I think that's a big one too.
That's huge. Most people have not had the space, the time, the agency to actually do that introspective work and really understand what brings them joy. And so there's a level of grief that happens for some people that come into the program and read the book because they're like, oh my goodness, they start judging themselves. They're like, I should know this. I'm 40 something years old. I'm 50 something years old. I should know this. And I don't. And that realization oftentimes is the hardest for people to work through.
What is an obstacle that you see is, I don't want to say exclusive to Black women, but probably a bigger obstacle for Black women than other genders and races that's out there?
Which one shall I pick?
Right, I know, right?
There are so many obstacles. I would say, you know, in a society that was really built for men and for white men,
yeah.
I think that it's really difficult. We have this conversation a lot within our community about what it means to be vulnerable and what it means to lean into the power of vulnerability when, as Black women, oftentimes when we are vulnerable in the workplace about maybe a mistake or something we don't know, oftentimes the margin for error for Black women is much, much smaller than it is for others. Oftentimes when I'm working with interracial groups, people have a hard time seeing inequities until we talk about who gets second chances and who doesn't. And then light bulbs go off. And then there's a realization that, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that, oh, I did give, you know, two white men second chances when they, you know, made mistakes. But when a Black woman came in, I was actually harsher on this Black woman. Or if I look at my data, disproportionately more Black women are leaving, you know, the organization And there are reasons why maybe I don't know specifics, and maybe they don't feel as comfortable, you know, speaking up and being fully honest and open about what happened. And so there's this really difficult dynamic where, as you know, women, we want to be our authentic selves and want to be upfront. Oftentimes, when your view, if you are one of few Black women on a team and you have very different experiences than most people on your team, there's a high likelihood that your opinion and your perspective is different from your teammates and your colleagues. Some people view just that difference as negative conflict, as a deficit. And so, and I'm sure a lot of people in other marginalized groups can probably relate to that. And so those are just two very common. There are many, many others. But when we as a society view difference as a deficit and we view a dissenting view as a threat, then it's really, really hard for us to have inclusive teams and for everyone to feel like they have an equal chance and opportunity to thrive at work.
And I think that starts just with something as simple as white people parenting their children different and saying, I say that to say, because I remember I was reading, I think her name was Dr. Robin DiAngelo's book on white fragility. And she was making the point that white people don't, if your kid is white and they only have white friends, you don't look at the kid and say, hey, you need to diversify your friends. You need to learn how to move in different spaces. Mm-hmm. But if you're any other race, you need to learn how to move in white spaces. You know what I mean? And
yes.
And white people don't know that. They mm-hmm. don't see that until it's really kind of brought to them that, like, yo, like, you never learn how to move in any kind of diverse spaces mm-hmm. at all because you don't have to. And exactly. It's different. And I wonder if Black women, do you find this that Black women maybe put more pressure on themselves, especially in leadership roles, to where they might not feel comfortable delegating certain things because mm-hmm. they feel like if this doesn't get done 110% the way I need it to, I'm out of here. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, I do. I see that a lot, which is why also so many of us struggle with stress and the impacts of stress, because the expectation for us is so incredibly high. And again, the margin for error is so incredibly low. And then we sometimes internalize. That's the healing work we have to do, is the internalizing of that we need to release, right? Like, because everyone else is dehumanizing us, then we start dehumanizing ourselves and get into this, you know, really unhelpful cycle. And that's what the book really is all about, is like how to untangle this cycle that we didn't start, but we're in right now. And what do you do now?
Yeah. And I think there's a big just society for everybody, for people of all races and genders, of mm-hmm. putting too much of our own identity in what we do for work. Because, I mean, first time you see somebody, we meet them, what do you do for a living? And then they tell you, and then that kind of tells you how to react to that person. And mm-hmm. it really doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter anyway, but it does in our society, but it shouldn't, is my point. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we need to let go of. The book is Becoming an Indigo Woman. Thank you. I could talk to you literally all day. This could have gone on for like easily in like another 2 hours. Anytime you want to come on, please contact me.
I would love to have you back on.
Yes, absolutely. Where can we find you on, you know, social media, Instagram, yes. Twitter, all of those things?
Of course, you can find me on Instagram at Indigo Women Community. We would love to hear from you. Would love for you to read the book. If you really love the book, we have a free Facebook group, Becoming an Indigo Woman. We'd love to have you in there. There are live discussions. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Shayna Hammond. And I can't wait to connect. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for doing this. Grab that book. I'm definitely going to check it out myself. Awesome. Even though I'm a white man, I'm going to read it.
It's for everyone.
It sounded like there's really gems in there for everybody. So I definitely do want to check it out. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other, Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Shayna Hammond. I thought she was absolutely incredible. But that's the end of the episode. Make sure you follow me on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, everything. At NolaWhite101, NolaWhite101. And remember, no matter what platform you're currently listening to this podcast on, if they let you rate and review, do that. Definitely subscribe, follow, whatever the hell they call it. Do that as well, man. I definitely appreciate all the love. And this podcast is growing. And that's thanks to you. So let's keep it growing and going in the right direction. All right. Remember, the sharing is caring. So share it on all your social platforms as well. Big guest next week. My guest will be W. Kamau Bell. Super excited to have him on. It's a great episode, too. So I'm looking forward to that. Having said that, that's it. I'm done. I'm gone.